Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode in the You Should Run podcast. I'm Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, right near Philadelphia, home of Gritty and other things. If you've been listening to the podcast, you know I try and talk with people from all across the country in every kind of election or elected office to learn about their experiences and highlight why people should be running for office, especially right now. And if you're like me, you also are looking for something to believe in right now. This is a troubling time in the country with, lots of anger, worry about COVID-19. And today, especially, I am asking you to believe in my guest, believe in Belinda Drake. She is running for state senate in Indiana, and she has a great Twitter handle, Believe in Belinda. I don't think any of my other guests have as good of a Twitter handle as far as I know. Most of them are boring things like me, just at their name. So she's running for state senate in Indiana. She has a great profile, and I think she's got a lot of interesting things to say. So with that in mind, Belinda, thank you so much for taking time today to talk on my You Should Run podcast.
All right. Thank you so much, Tony, for having me. It is an honor to be the first Indiana candidate on your podcast this year in 2020. I am running for Indiana State Senate in District 32, which is the far east side and southeast side of Indianapolis. It is with great honor and in my most humble voice to say that I am a candidate this year. I am a candidate of my true authentic self. And at the end of the day, I'm just here to put people into politics. And like I always tell people, thank you for believing in me. Thank you, Tony. Thank you for organizations like Run for Something, Vote for Choice, Moms Demand, and several other organizations that have, again, believed, continue to support my candidacy, continue to appreciate the hard work that my team has been doing here in my community. And we're grateful to be here. And so I'll turn it back over to you, Tony.
So you have decided to run for office, but obviously you didn't decide just now after all this. You have been involved for a bit. When did you first become really active and interested in politics in general? Like, was there an event or a campaign or anything where you really started to focus on what's going on?
I think that I've always been an activist growing up in the streets of Gary, Indiana, here in my home state, Indiana. I was introduced to a lot of things at an early age, things like inadequate health care, a broken criminal justice system, and just lack of access to marginalized communities. And it was a few years ago when the second woman in my family, black woman in my family, passed away from breast cancer. I am the oldest of 25 grandchildren, so I carry a different weight of responsibility when it comes to being a mother, not only in my community, but in my family. My aunt passed away from breast cancer. And prior to that, about 10 years before that, my grandmother passed away from breast cancer. So I started to become activated and say, what do I do in the event that this happens to me or my siblings or my cousins that I now am responsible for as an activist? So I get activated to just start to fight for adequate health care, reproductive justice, to make sure that our marginalized communities are being accounted for and their resources make their way to the black community. I would say that that's when I officially became activated here recently. But as you did note, I have been involved in Democratic politics for quite some time. Right out of college, I interned with my congressman under Carson, where after I graduated from IEPUI and I received my degree in political science and legal studies. And then I just became involved in community work with Public Allies right after that, just learning how to build community with community, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I just continue to stay involved. Recently, I served as the 7th District Chair for Indiana Young Democrats. currently a racial justice and diversity coordinator for our Indiana National Organization for Women. I continue to pour into our NAACP Young Adults Committee. I just continue to stay involved, but most importantly, I try to listen and figure out how can I take everything that I've learned, everything that I've experienced, everything that my family's been through, my friends, the current state that we in, and how do I fight for a bold policy with bold leadership? And that's what brought me to run for state senate this year in 2020.
Yeah, and you have an interesting district there. And you're running for state senate. There's obviously things that you could run for at any election. I learned in this, like, there's 500,000 elected offices in the country. What made you motivated to run for this particular seat at this particular time?
If you take a look, Indiana Senate District 32 is what I like to call the mixing pot. Because it is compromised, or it is compiled of several different townships due to the unfortunate thing we call gerrymandering. So it includes Warren Township, Perry Township, Franklin Township, and also Center Township. So that's a diverse group of communities that I strongly believe deserve the leadership that I will bring to our state house. And then with doing so, I'll be able to work with other state legislatures to make sure that not only I'm able to help my community here in Indianapolis, but then I can work with other state senators and our General Assembly to make sure that I'm also having a positive impact on my family that's still in Gary.
Mm-hmm. And, I've seen things. This is a crazy time in the country, but maybe it's not crazy. You talked about health disparity. You talked about disparities for Black women especially. And people are talking about those now because of all of the things happening, but none of that's new, right? Like, you may not have been talking about COVID-19 when you started, but are any of these issues we're talking about new, or is it peeling back what's there?
See, and I like the way that you stated that. These issues aren't new. If we go back again, 400 years to of being Black in America, these issues have always been there. So it's unfortunate that as Black Hoosiers, as Black Americans, we are fighting two things right now in our state and in our country. And that's the pandemic due to COVID-19. And we're also fighting racism. I'm hopeful that our state is headed in the right direction and that Black lives will matter to everyone at some point. But we have a long way to go, and that's why it's really important that my community, my district, get the real leadership with a bold agenda that everybody so deserves. And like you said, over my lifetime as a Hoosier, this isn't new. I watched my grandmother and my favorite aunt, both lose a battle of breast cancer, and they deserve better health care. And I just believe that in Indiana, like, we must do better, and doing better sometimes requires some of us to just roll up our sleeves and literally run for something. Yeah. And to step up and throw our hats in the ring, as scary as it may feel, what's our alternative, especially for a Black American? What's the alternative to continue to wait, to continue to do nothing? I just feel like I have to continue to push myself to be that voice for the voiceless and to make sure that my communities have someone that's fighting for equity in all spaces.
Yeah, and we talked at the beginning about when you started to get involved and engaged. But I feel like when you're someone like me, straight white male, age 18 to 50, you could ignore stuff if you want. Like, the world's just set up for people like me. Do you feel like your life, especially if you're not just Black, but a Black woman, with all things, that your life is just inherently political, whether you want it to be or not?
And see, and I thank you for recognizing that, because I think that that's a conversation that we need to continue to have, especially in the current state that we're living in, here in Indiana, as well as in America. Unfortunately, I'm going to be a Black American, regardless if there's an election or not. That's just something that we have to continue to acknowledge. But also, I'm a Black American female, and also someone who identifies as part of the LGBT community. So I would like to say that on the positive side, yes, I am one of the most marginalized candidates probably running for office, not just in Indiana, but throughout their entire country. But at the same time, I would like to say that I'm one of the most experienced leaders running for office due to my lived experiences, along with the classroom experiences and activism work that I've put in over the last 10 years.
Yeah, you talk about your experiences and preparedness there. If I'm applying for a job for, like, to be a lawyer or to be a executive somewhere, obviously, you know, people look at my professional resume. But what value do you think your personal, not just you, but anyone's personal experience means for a representative democracy? Like, obviously, that seems to be lacking in a lot of governments right now.
And I think that that's actually a great question, Tony. I think that we have to continue to support candidates such as myself who have these lived experiences to advocate for a policy that works for everyday Hoosiers and Americans. I think that there are just some things that you cannot learn in a classroom. I've just been blessed enough to learn in the classroom as well as through life experiences. But having that true experience of what it feels like to be disenfranchised, what it feels like to live through discrimination, what it feels like to just be constantly scrutinized and or not included in everyday conversation, is something that a lot of candidates cannot speak from. So I am grateful. I'm a very positive person. I'm grateful to be where I'm at today as a young Black female adult, as part of the LGBT community that's fighting to use my voice for change and to not only bring my lived experiences, but also my political experience to fight for, like I said, to many different communities within Senate District 32, as well as all Hoosiers. And I just want to add on to that and say, right now we're in a state of looking for someone to believe in. Mm-hmm. We're looking for leaders to believe in. We're looking for real people to believe in. And I think that that's what I bring. And that's what I will bring to our General Assembly come 2021 once I get elected this November. I will bring real lived experiences along with the book experience, along with my 10 years of working with Hoosier families as a social worker, and also someone who helped launch the Affordable Care Act in Indiana. So I've been dedicated and invested in people is what I like to say. And when the people ask, when people are looking for something to believe in, just because, especially here in Indiana, we are experiencing some very scary times, and people are just are looking for someone to believe in. So I'm grateful for that that call and the ask of my community, and I'll continue to try to be that voice for them.
You mentioned that things are particular to Indiana, and it seems like when you watch TV, that, and I try not to, I try to, you know, I rarely have TV on, I focus on other media, but that it seems like these issues are national issues. But how are all of them, whether it is, you know, the racial issues going on right now or healthcare, what is particular to Indiana and how are you addressing it?
So right now, with unemployment at an all-time high, we have to start thinking about our Hoosier workers, knowing that the most essential workers in Indiana, specifically, are predominantly women and Black and brown folks, and also LGBTQ community, which are the most marginalized here in the state of Indiana. So taking these groups and looking at the numbers that are rolling out due to COVID, I think that we have to do a better job of treating our essential workers better. And at the end of the day, we have to make sure that jobs allow for all Hoosiers, regardless of your class or status, to allow Hoosiers to receive adequate health care benefits. So we talk about the pandemic on a national level, but here in my state, our unemployment is at an all-time high. And of course, this is going to affect the communities that I represent the most. And then we hear about what happened to George Floyd on a national level. And we have similar instances here in the state of Indiana. We are fighting for justice here in our state as well for those we have lost to police brutality. And right now, we did roll out a law enforcement and police reform, which you can find on our website. It's BelindaDrake.com. And in that policy that we've already rolled out, so I'm rolling that policy before I even get elected, so that my community knows that we mean serious business, that we are really ready to lead and to be that real leader with bold change. So I think that with everything that's going on nationally, we have to remind folks that law enforcement and police reform takes place in local government.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place when you elect your state senators and your state reps. And if I can continue to engage with my communities and get them to understand the connection and how everything that we're fighting for nationally can actually be changed when they actually come out and vote for me this November, we can actually roll out what we already have in place for our law enforcement and police reform. And everybody knows, not just here in Indiana, but across the country, to all the people that are starting to believe in my candidacy, and I'll say it, believe in Belinda, they know that that's one thing that I will continue to fight for, because we need reform across the board. We need criminal justice reform, and that starts at the state level.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that people always look at politics and think about the president, whether it's Donald or, I don't want to say his last name, or Barack Obama or Joe Biden, but there is a lot, so much that happens on the state level. What are some of the things that you think your lived experience can help do in terms of changing policy? Like, what kinds of policies, big or small, do you think that are realistic that you can work to accomplish?
Number one would be one policy that I could definitely fight to bring about in the state of Indiana is there's an all-inclusive hate crimes bill. Right now, I currently sit proudly as a Black woman that's part of the LGBT community. And right now, hate crimes are hard to, I guess, fight for when we talk about inclusion. It's hard to get people to understand that all the identities need to be protected when we talk about a hate crime bill. So I would definitely be fighting for that. And that's something I could do in the state Senate. And then I can also, again, fight for the rollout of the police and law enforcement reform. So those are the two things that I will be fighting for day one once I'm elected. And I look forward to working with my other Democrats that are currently elected so that we can roll out an inclusive hate crimes bill. And again, a police and law enforcement reform so that Black lives as well as other marginalized communities are protected here in the state of Indiana.
Yeah, and so how has your campaign been received? And have you been getting a good response throughout? I don't know your district as well as you, obviously.
Yes. So actually, I'm glad that you asked this question because I am excited. We are running a groundbreaking campaign, and it showed in our primary election results. So for the first time, hear me out, Tony, for the first time in almost 10 years since my district was extremely gerrymandered, we received over we received over 600 more votes than my opponent in our primary. So what that means is that we are on a track to win and win big come November. Mm-hmm. We just continue to need that support, whether it be volunteers or financial support, so we can continue to reach voters and continue to let them know that, hey, I'm here, I'm working with you, I'm listening to you, you have options. How can I help? And I'm really glad that you asked that question, because a lot of people are starting to notice what we've been doing here in Senate District 32, and the voters are responding, the communities are responding, and it shows this past primary election on June 2nd, where we actually, again, for the first time in almost 10 years, received more votes than my opponent, and that's something that my team will forever be proud of, but we know that we still have a lot of work to do for me to get elected come November.
Yeah, and I saw that your opponent, and if you don't want to talk about them by name, but your opponent actually got in some hot water for comments years ago about Black Lives Matter, right?
That's actually true. It was brought to my attention that my opponent basically just refused to acknowledge the Black Lives Matter movement going back to 2016. And that's extremely unfortunate. And some of my leaders within our Democratic Party did ask for my opponent to resign because such ideology is scary to have in our state house. And I just want to say that regardless of whether my opponent resigns or not, we still have an election to win. Mm-hmm. We still have real issues that we need to fight for. And whether my opponent steps down or not, I strongly encourage my opponent to seek understanding, to become better informed of what it means to represent all communities in your district, including the Black and brown communities. And again, I pray that he can open his heart to change that type of thinking because it's extremely scary for the Black people in this district, including myself. And that's extremely disheartening. And I'll continue again to pray that my opponent can open up his heart to be inclusive in his thinking.
Now, on a positive side about Black Lives Matter, and there are many positive sides to it right now. Yeah. I've seen that the national sentiment to the phrase Black Lives Matter back when it started and after Michael Brown, I believe, was very low. People did not, it was like at 30% popularity. And now there's a substantial majority of people who agree with it right now. And do you sense from your campaigning that there is a different feeling on the ground from actual voters than what people would have expected?
I don't know mm-hmm. what actual people would have expected, but what I would say is this. After years of failed leadership of systemic racism that started over 400 years ago in America, that did not end on June 19th in Galveston, Texas, or with the passing of the 13th Amendment, this system has just changed into something new, something that became segregation, the Jim Crow laws, poll taxes, voting tests, brutality at the hands of who our police is supposed to serve. And right now, my Black brothers and sisters, and including myself, are just at a point where we're saying enough is enough. And we're calling on leaders, we're calling on allies to help us, to stand alongside us, to hold their friends accountable, and understanding what it means to really say that Black Lives Matter. And I'm grateful for those who, again, has opened up their hearts to understand that all communities matter and that Black lives do matter. I just think that this is something, like I just said, this is something that we've been dealing with for years and years. But right now, everybody's listening, everybody's engaged, and we have to, as a Black community, turn this moment that we have in America and in Indiana into a movement. We have to continue to fight for change, whether that be come the election this November or whether it be community conversations. We cannot stop. We have to continue again to fight for access and equity in all spaces through November 3rd.
Yeah, I imagine it's a conversation at work that can't end. And I think, you know, I've been reflecting on my own life. Even just today, my wife and I were going through some baby pictures, and I was talking about my grandparents passed away, their funeral, and all the lessons that we had going back and recognizing our own heritage and history of my grandparents. On my one side came from Germany and my grandmother's family came from Lebanon, and we can trace it. And I think a lot of white people don't understand what it's like to not know your history. Is that a big thing that people just, it's hard to understand when it's something you haven't experienced?
I think that's a conversation that non-Black individuals will continue to have with themselves and with their families, and just do some deep reflecting to figure out ways that you can improve as a human being. And I'm grateful. Like, that touched my heart. So I thank you for challenging yourself and your family to simply put, just do better. And sometimes doing better means taking a step back to figure out how have you played a part in the systemic racism. Because sometimes, like you said, individuals don't know that they've done it. They don't know that they are feeding into systematic oppression in ways that aren't always obvious. So I would continue to challenge my allies to do some self-reflecting and hold these meaningful and intentional conversations with their communities.
Yeah, and sometimes we don't have an answer. Sometimes it's just you have to have an attitude of at least wanting to improve, and hopefully those of us who are parents, like myself, trying to instill to our own children something better than what we saw growing up and what our parents saw.
And I think that we have to start somewhere. So mm-hmm. let's just try to find a positive in this. And starting somewhere means, like, sometimes just having this conversation and recognizing your own privilege and being inclusive, like you said, like you reached out to the most, probably what people would consider the most marginalized candidate in 2020, and find ways to be inclusive, find ways to help make sure that we're telling our own stories through our own lens. And so I'm grateful for you, to be completely honest. Because, again, I'm not the only candidate here running in the state of Indiana, but I am the one that you chose to reach out to. So it means a lot, and I just want to make sure that allies that are listening to this know that you are appreciated and you are needed, and continue to be that voice and spaces that people like myself just aren't yet welcomed into.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. I found you because I looked up Run for Something. I talked with Ross okay. Ricketto Morales a few weeks ago. Morales Ricketto, I got it backwards, but and I've talked with other Run for Something candidates, both intentionally and unintentionally, just finding out after the fact. So you got involved with them. Why should other people be considering uh-huh. running for office now or next year? Because now might be too late for people for 2020, but what encouragement would you have for people telling them that you should be running for office wherever you live?
So what I would tell to anyone that's considering a run for office or just considering whether or not to become civically engaged, because that's what it really is, know that you are qualified and you are the person to do the job if you feel so moved to do so. And if you're living in your purpose and everything that you're doing in life, follow the steps that have been ordered for you. And when you get that feeling, that sense of urgency to do more, not just for yourself, but for everybody else around you, then it's your time to step up to the plate and serve at a higher capacity. And so if anybody ever told you not to run, disregard it, ignore it, look yourself in the mirror every day and say, I'm going to run for something, and I'm encouraging you. And my name is Belinda Drake, candidate for Indiana State Senate in District 32. That anyone listening to this podcast, know that you are definitely qualified and you should definitely run for something. And to my next generation, I like to say this as well, Tony. I'm doing this for you guys. I'm doing this for the people that are looking for something to believe in, that next generation of leaders. Know that in all that people like myself are doing, it's because I want a better state for you. I want a better country for you. So if you can find it in your heart to become civically engaged, then I've done my duty already as a public servant. Because a lot of times growing up where I'm from, they don't teach us that. They don't teach us to become civically engaged at a young age. So I'm wanting to pour into the next generation and to simply put, just be an inspiration again for the next generation.
Well, if you're listening, and I hope you are, but you wouldn't hear me if you weren't, I hope that you will believe in Belinda and believe in yourself and challenge where you live and run for office as well. And I think that you can follow Belinda. Tell people how they can get in touch with you, how they can follow and learn more.
So right now, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook. It's Believe in Belinda Drake. And then we also have a Twitter where it's I Am Belinda Drake. And then we have a website that's as beautiful as they come, and it's BelindaDrake.com. And right now, we do have a call for volunteers. We are growing because we're going to win, and we're going to give our district the representation that they need. And so we need 100 volunteers, and of course, we appreciate any financial support that anyone is able to give us so that we can continue to reach voters and continue to fight to be that bold, real change here in our state house come 2021.
And you don't mind me saying, I love the name Belinda Drake. It just sounds like a name that would be like a detective from like a detective series or a prominent lawyer or a TV report. It just sounds like it's an authoritative name. No offense to myself, I just think it's a cooler name than Tony Heil. It's a good name. You should keep it.
And I plan to keep it. So you're not the first person to say that, so I appreciate it. And that's what it all comes down to as well. Sometimes it's just being the right person at the right time for the right job with a really bold and progressive approach to leadership. So again, it's Belinda Drake, and I always do this even when I talk to my voters, because I am a millennial, so I am a little cool, I think so. Thank my dad for the cool last name, and it's kind of easy to remember, so it's Belinda Drake. And if you are in the state of Indiana, please vote for me this coming November.
Great. I encourage everyone to learn more about Belinda. She's got a lot to offer Indiana, and maybe her lessons will have a lot to offer the world, or at least the country. So please follow her. If you're listening, please share this podcast, tell your friends, and maybe you should run for office too. Thank you so much, Belinda, and best of luck in this year's election.
All right. I appreciate you, Tony. Have a great one. Thank you.